What's up, listener? Thanks for tuning in to episode 107 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. You're going to get our thoughts on the latest and, well, maybe not greatest entry into the X franchise, X-Men Apocalypse. X-Men in the 80s. Yay!
Geek Booner!
Joining us for this review is Rugboy and first-time guest reviewer Kevin McPartlin, stencil artist that also goes by the name Mr. Antihero on Instagram. You may have heard him before. We met him at Free Comic Book Day at Past Times this year, and he was on part one of that show, and I knew we were going to hit it off, and he's a big X fan, so it was the perfect opportunity to get him on the show. Check out the show notes at jockandnerd.com/107 for links to his stuff and some of the things we talk about in this episode. Yahoo! Here's some theme music.
It's the Jock and Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Jock and Nerd!
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the Jock.
He's the Nerd.
And this is the Jock and Nerd Podcast featuring our exclusive pal, everybody's favorite felty American, Rugberto Bambino. Rugs, what's up? How's it going?
What's up, dudes? How's it going?
Nice to hear you from the basement. Listener, this is going to be our X-Men Apocalypse review, so we have a very special guest reviewer, a new friend of the show that we kind of just picked up in the last month.
Yeah, he's been on the show, though.
At Free, you may have heard from him, such things known as Free Comic Book Day, Part 1. Big X-Men fan joining us for the review is Kevin McPartlin, also known as Mr. Antihero. Kevin, thanks for driving all the way from Arlington Heights.
Oh, thanks for having me.
To be here.
Could have Skyped you in.
That far?
It's, yeah. Kevin, how was your drive?
It was about an hour long, but, you know, you get a little tunes going, and you start chain smoking the old cigarettes there, and you know, before you know it, you're having heart palpitations, and you're on a podcast.
It's good podcast listening time too. But man, that is dedication that you drove. Rugs, he drove an hour in shitty Sunday Chicago traffic to get here. When we could have just Skyped you in.
And you could have been doing like other things, like on the weather's great, and you just
my computer like needs a crank to operate. So like to Skype me in would have just sounded terrible.
Well, I'm glad your computer sucks, because I'm really glad to have you here, because we had a great time at Free Comic Book Day, man. How'd you end up doing overall that day?
It's always great to do those shows. You know, you meet people, you talk to people. We were talking before the show that there's like a ban on us talking off mic, because we had like four great conversations.
Yes.
Fuck off with those conversations.
Yeah, we can't have them off mic anymore.
Save it for the show.
We found out the meaning of life in like 20 minutes, and then it wasn't recorded, and we don't remember.
That means it didn't exist. So, you know, ever since we met you, I was like, we got to have this guy back. And you're a big X-Men fan.
Yeah, definitely.
This movie came out, and I thought this would be the best opportunity to get you on the show. Let's find out how big of an X-Men fan are you? How far do you go back?
I mean, I've spent a lot of time collecting the stuff from the 70s and the 80s and read it all the – I'm like a staple at half-price books. Like I'm pretty sure at the half-price books by my house, they're like, there's the X-Men dude who's going to come in and look through all our X-Men books and like mine all this stuff. So, I mean, I've read quite a bit. Obviously, the X-Men, you can't – I don't think you could read everything if you had a lifetime and no job.
No, there's
so much, with all the spinoffs and shit.
Favorite era of X-Men for you then?
My favorite era – it's hard to say. I think the 80s is really strong, but I will say like my favorite run of anything X-Men was the X-Men X-Force. The X-Force that had X-23 and Wolverine and Angel. That and Remender are like the top of my list. And I'm kind of lukewarm on the 90s stuff, actually.
Yeah, the Jim Lee X-Men kind of era.
Who's your favorite mutant?
My favorite – I'm a huge X-23 fan, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Which is fairly new. Listener, he's got a dope X-Men New Era hat on right now. It tells you how big of a fan he is. Rugs, I think – I don't know. The listener kind of knows we're all big kind of X-Men fan. We don't really talk about X-Men that much.
I don't know if we're all big X-Men.
No?
I'm not a big X-Men.
You're not a big X-Men fan?
I think I was a big X-Men guy when I was a kid.
So are you a 90s animated cartoon X-Men?
Yeah, that's how I grew up.
Okay. Okay.
The 90s animated cartoon and then got out of comics – and then jumped back into comics, and X-Men was so confusing when we jumped in that I was like, I can't.
It's always confusing. Yeah. But, okay, that's a good baseline. Yeah. Rugs, where do you lie on this? What's your favorite X-Men?
Well, I kind of started X-Men when, Chris Claremont made the first big team with Colossus and Wolverine and all those guys living in the mansion together and, you know, doing all these crazy, you know, superhero things. Around the 90s, after Layfield stumbled onto the scene with Cable and Strife and all this confusing-ass shit, like, I was still down, and I still read it up until, like, Emma Frost was part of the X-Men, and she was with Cyclops and all that stuff, and it was drawn by this guy that disappeared from comics. I forgot, Salvador De La Roca or something like that.
Oh, I don't even remember him.
Was that the Grant Morrison era or just before?
I think it was just before Grant Morrison. And then I really liked Astonishing X-Men.
That's the Joss Whedon X-Men.
Yeah.
That's
That was really cool, and it was a good throwback to like the classic stuff. I read X-Factor when it first came out. I really liked that. The Simonsons were all over that shit.
And that especially relates with this movie. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that. What else?
So I'm pretty much I stopped maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I every once in a while I'll dip back in for something cool, but I haven't been able to follow it. There's just too much, you know, musical chairs going on in that book.
Yeah. I've always loved the X-Men. I like a lot of the movies. I got into it like reading when I started collecting comic books in like 1986. They were printing the X-Men Classics, which would go back and print those awesome Claremont storylines. And then that was awesome because I was like, this is like a really awesome soap opera. You know, being at that age, you're reading this, like, they have superheroes, and it's social commentary, but it's a soap opera. You love the characters. The Dark Phoenix Saga, when I read that, I was like,
oh, shit.
This is phenomenal. This is the best shit. So and I got through the Jim Lee 90s, where, you know, there was millions of comic books, and then I kind of stopped reading when I stopped reading everything in the 90s. I like what Brian Bendis has done with pulling the X-Men from the past back into the present.
Yeah.
I got like back on with the Avengers versus X-Men and Cyclops killing Professor X and all that. Like, that shit was compelling. Right now, I have not been reading the X-Men. There's not that many books. They seem to have downplayed a lot of the X-Men after another reboot.
I kind of jumped off after Secret Wars. But All New X-Men, which is where they brought the X-Men from the past,
yes.
that was an amazing series.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that as well.
I had some gripes with the X-Men, especially when Wolverine died.
Yeah, see, I didn't even bother reading that shit. I was done. I didn't read any of that. I was like, I know this is a gimmick. I don't care. He's going to come back.
Well, he hasn't.
He hasn't come back.
That's true.
Yeah. And let me tell you, like, the Death of Wolverine story is actually really good. The problem is it's only 4 issues, and it should easily be 6 or 8. Like, it just feels a little rushed. But whatever. Like, I'm a huge Wolverine fan, but at the same time, I understood that he can go, and there's so many other things, kind of like we're seeing in the movies,
where
a lot less Wolverine, and you can actually get into some of the other characters, so I wasn't upset. What really chapped my ass as soon as he died was the Wolverine and the X-Men book.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, we're going to read his will, and it was this whole thing, we're going to read the will and see what happens. And he leaves the Xavier Institute to fucking Spider-Man.
Oh, that's right. He teaches there. There's Spider-Man in the X-Men book where he's a professor at the school.
And I bought it, and I couldn't even bring myself to
How
read
is he
it.
An X-Man? He's not a mutant, is he?
Right. Not at all.
It's just replacing one of the more popular characters for another popular character.
He was just available. You know what? But this is a good baseline now. Everybody gets where we're all coming from for this movie.
I want to just throw this in, though, because, like, I have a niece and nephew, and my nephew is, like, Batman to the nines.
Yeah.
So he always wants to watch superhero stuff. And I have the X-Men animated series on DVD, and we watch that a lot because it's got a great mix of, like, girls and boys. And I'm not going to get off on, like, some whole rant about feminism, but when Wolverine died, you easily could have given the school to either Storm, who was fucking amazing, and her run, her solo series is one of the best runs that you've read in years.
Like,
you need to pick it up and trade. Or Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
So it's like you had two people there who were longtime characters that easily could have taken over the mansion, and instead you just like Hackney throw in Spider-Man, which just fucking plays into all my paranoia about Disney just totally wanting to bone the X-Men as hard as they can.
That's like, why I gave up superhero comics. Exactly that reason.
It's getting too political for stupid reasons.
And there's a crossover every 3 months where they want you to start reading fucking Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's like, just stop. Just stop what you're doing.
I'm not even reading any X-Men books.
I'm reading All New Wolverine, which is actually really good.
Oh, I should probably read that. That's X-23's book.
The X-23 book, which is – it's fun. It's, you know, it's good. it's just, it's a little bit different than, you know, the normal shit. So.
That's good. We need different. That's something maybe this movie is not, is different. Mm. So with that said, let's get to the movie.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Okay, first of all, let's hit this.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
If you don't want to be spoiled, turn around, go back, back up the
Fuck
street
off.
Slowly, put on your lights, whatever, come back and watch later.
Eat shit.
But we're going to spoil X-Men Apocalypse, the ninth movie. I count this as the ninth movie in the series.
Yeah,
with Deadpool.
With Deadpool, the sixth movie in the main X-Men series.
Yep.
This thing is sitting at 48% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yikes.
There's a number. Here's some more numbers. It's budgeted, made for $175 million. And opening weekend, it's Labor Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend.
You
fucking unpatriotic fuck.
Whatever. They're both for the soldiers.
Not really.
No, they're not.
They're not.
Listen, every holiday, I salute the soldiers because of them, we're here.
I got a side tangent. So Memorial Day weekend, everyone goes, what's your Memorial Day weekend
It's
plans?
Not supposed to be a happy and fucking holiday, people.
Oh, I'm going to go barbecue. I'm going to do this. Wait, no. It's for dead soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Ugh.
It's supposed to be very somber. And
you're supposed to go visit, like, am I supposed to visit a cemetery?
But you know what? Kohl's has an unbelievable sale. Right. How can you miss that? It just makes me happy.
It's the kickoff of the summer. Anyways, I'm sorry.
The death is the kickoff to life. It made $65 million on Memorial Day weekend, which is, you would think it would make more.
It was underperformed.
As of June 5th, 2016, it has made domestically $160 million. Worldwide, $402 million.
So it's profitable.
Not bad. It's doing good overseas, I guess. That's it. So we usually like to start with just overall opening thoughts, what you thought of the movie. Kevin, I'll put you on the spot. You're the guest. Why don't you kick us off?
Well, we'll see how much hate I get for this, but I really enjoyed the movie.
Okay.
It had a lot of problems. It had a shit ton of problems. I really liked it, and I liked to see, even though it wasn't a lot, I liked to see the... a little character development and background to Cyclops and Jean and Storm and people that aren't Wolverine, which is something that's been severely lacking in these movies.
Good call. Okay. Anthony, quick thoughts.
I don't know how you enjoyed this, but all right.
This is why he was going to be good on this.
I mean, I didn't hate it like Batman v Superman. I didn't walk out like, fuck, I hate this movie. I walked out and I was like, I almost fell asleep two or three times in this movie. I don't think... this movie actually had a plot that was worth 2.5 hours or however long
mm-hmm.
it was. So my overall thoughts were, that was pretty boring, to be honest.
Okay.
And I'm not normally bored by superhero films.
Yeah,
so.
Right?
At least, and I can say this, at least Batman v Superman, although I think that film is complete dog shit, at least elicited a reaction out of me, where X-Men Apocalypse, I was just like, well, that happened.
Meh.
All right.
Okay.
Cool.
Interesting.
Wow.
Rug boy, your turn.
Well, unlike Anthony, I actually slept through the movie.
He didn't just fall asleep.
All right, I had two problems going in. All right, one, I was tired. And two, I had to shit really bad. So I had to, like, leave.
Oh, shit.
I had to leave of my own volition at one point. And then towards the end, I, like, just fell asleep. And I was, like, fighting to stay awake just so I could see the end. And I was like, why don't I must be so tired? But I've been in the same spot many a time and not fallen asleep. So I think... you know, some of it goes to me being tired and some of it goes to this movie being boring, like Anthony said. Overall, I didn't hate the movie. I just watched it again and I didn't hate it. But there's definitely a lot of fucking stupid shit going on, a lot of terrible writing. And I have a problem with them revising everybody's backstory all the time and the inconsistencies within itself and in the universe they created. It's very inconsistent.
Yes.
So those are my problems. But other than that, if you're watching it as a standalone film,
yeah,
like it's some parts of it are enjoyable. It's well acted in places. You know, the casting's pretty good. You know, there's elements of a good movie there. So it's not all bad and it's not all good. It's kind of in the middle somewhere. It's right in the middle.
Rugs, this is why you have to use that app Run Pee. It tells you when to go to the bathroom.
There's no app called Run Shit, though.
That is a good point, Rugs. You can't really schedule your shits. Like a pee, like, you could hold in, I suppose.
Yeah, that's about like 5 minutes tops.
Listen,
yeah.
Any app developers out there, that's a golden, like from us,
Nerd.
Free idea. Piggyback off Run Pee, make a Run Shit.
Do you have to like program with like your average shit time? Like my average shit time is like 17 minutes.
Yeah, you'd have to go through like a training for like a week to schedule to like log in your shits, and then the AI would take over.
You got to factor in though the messy stall that you got to clean up before you use it.
Yeah.
Plus, you'd have to answer questions like how many cigarettes have you smoked today? How much coffee have you drank today?
Oh, yeah.
And then that's also variables.
Any spicy foods?
Last time you had Mexican, right. This is a fucking $1 million idea.
Turn the microphones off.
We're done. Look, I'm taking this on Shark Tank. I guess I should tell about what I thought of the movie.
No, no one cares what you think of
it. No, nobody really does.
What do you think?
It was fun. I enjoyed hanging out with these characters again. I kind of missed the X characters. The cast did the best with what they had given to them. Singer's visuals are great. The set pieces, the action's pretty good. There's no fighting.
Fuck off.
But that, like, I'm talking about like the big Quicksilver scene. It's edited well in terms of like you know what's going on. I was yawning, and it just seemed more of the same shit again. And then it ends with a team. This is the sixth fucking movie, and you're like, now here's the X-Men. That seemed weird to me, and it was a little bit too long. It didn't need to be 2.5 hours long.
We got to talk about the elephant in the room, and that's Civil War. Because after you watch that movie and have the coalescence of action, comedy, fast-paced editing, a moving story.
Colorful characters.
Yes. And everybody working together, it works so well that anything by comparison that's not at that level is going to really look a lot worse than it is.
It did not help that this movie came right after Civil War. Had it come out first, I think we would have given it a little bit more of a pass. But altogether, it seems like a movie that should have came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen all this, and it probably has like one of the most simple plots out of all the X-Men movies, which was also surprising.
Simple is an understatement. This is a very, very straightforward film with no twists or turns.
It just seems out of place.
It's literally Apocalypse wants to destroy the world.
And there's no social commentary in it whatsoever.
Okay, so before we get to all the bad shit, let's focus on a little bit if we can.
Okay.
What do we like? The positives of the movie. Because there was some good stuff. Like, I agree with all you. Wasn't a horrible movie.
No.
But definitely had a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Well,
you want to go with? Well, you might rant for a while.
You start with one good thing, Kevin McPartland, Mr. Antihero. You can start the positivity train because we are very quickly going to fucking trash the shit out of this movie. But I want a little bit of positivity first.
Yeah. Seeing the goddamn Phoenix that I've waited for 10+ fucking years.
I'll agree, they did it right. Finally, it was from inside her.
I got uncontrolled. I got to even disagree with that, but all right, keep going.
Look, we saw it used the way you kind of always wanted it to be used. It looked great visually. Like, you're like, oh, that's the shit. I love when she, like, starts walking on air. It's kind of cool. Now, moment when it happens at the end, that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Because it's just pretty much a deus ex machina for the whole goddamn...
Well, no, I mean, that I don't have a problem with the deus ex machina.
But I like their, at least, kind of their alluding, and they showed you... The powers, the way you know it in a comic.
Right. I like that she was walking off the side of the building.
Yeah.
And she just kept walking like it didn't stop.
It looked very cool.
It looked cool. Yeah. It looked
cool. And I think Sophie Turner did a great job with the character just overall. I mean, obviously she didn't have a lot of screen time because you had to give Magneto half an hour for another backstory that explains why he's going to change sides again. And then you had to fucking shove Wolverine in there for another half an hour. Because like Stryker can't die. I don't know. Like, why can't we just leave this character like in the ether of the X-Men?
Hey, he's starting
like,
with a negative.
I know. So I thought we were gonna be positive. Well, somebody's gonna get Wolverine to Weapon X. But Ruggs, hey, you know Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones. Ruggs, we're not big Game of Thrones fans.
I am.
Yeah,
you are.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was not familiar with her from the Game of Thrones.
Is she a redhead? No, right?
Yep.
Oh, she is. Okay, cool. She was just. Okay, in this role. To me, it was kind of very one note. Ruggs, what do you think of the Sophie Turner?
Yeah, I wasn't like impressed. I mean, there's people who love her.
Yeah.
And love her from Game of Thrones. So they're going to give her a little bit more of a knob polishing than I will. But like,
it's hot.
But like, I mean, I agree with you, Imran. I think she was okay. She was fine. I mean, I wasn't like, I didn't hate her. She did a serviceable job. I think I said that wrong.
Serviceable.
Yeah. Ruggs, you got something that you liked? Something positive?
Oh, I like the acting.
Okay.
I mean, basically, okay, you got these great – James McAvoy is a good actor.
Look, McAvoy was probably the only one who was trying.
He was channeling Patrick Stewart.
Fassbender was trying.
McAvoy, these two guys always they're great together. They always steal the screen.
They can't – They'll roll out of bed and act well. Like, they can't.
I mean, Fassbender, he does despair so good. Like, I really loved the beginning. I kind of liked the beginning of this movie up until the after the Quicksilver scene. Then it kind of fell apart.
Wait, you were into Rug Boy's thoughts.
Sorry.
And you totally cut him off.
I took over. Okay, who else do you like in the acting, right?
No, I mean, Fassbender, when that arrow goes through his wife and kid, and then he's like, ask God. He's like, this is what you want me to be?
Yeah, that whole scene was great. That I was really cool. Liked that scene.
Don't you think it was a little Darth Vader-y, though? Like, why?
you know what
it's
it
like
was?
Calculon.
It was Wolverine Origins when his family dies.
Exactly.
It's the same exact scene.
Didn't he already go through this once? No, he didn't.
Like, yeah.
Every 10 years, it's scheduled.
Every 10 years, he's got another one.
I'll agree with Ruggs, though. I liked that scene. I thought that was probably the best scene in the film, on it, like, if just taken alone.
Mm.
And like his whole, like, in Poland, kind of like staying in the shadows. That scene was great.
And you want him to kill the fucking guys right there, and the way he does it.
Well, you
it
want
is
him to kill them, but you're like, fuck, he's going back to.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, it's kind of like a tragic thing all around.
Yeah.
And then the other scene I really liked, Nightcrawler. I thought he was really good. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very, very good comic relief. And I like the ending shot when they're finally embracing the colorful costumes. I thought that
I
was
love cool. The last 30 seconds when you get to see the fucking costumes from the
and
90s.
Sentinels.
And what?
And Sentinels.
And the Sentinels. Well, we saw the Sentinels from, you know, the last movie.
Yeah,
you saw but you see Nightcrawler in his, like, red, like, the red outfit.
Well, even Mystique is not naked anymore.
Mystique is not naked. Scott has, like, the offside, one side circle X with the bands, like Jim Lee drew.
That's a radio for some reason.
Is that you tap it?
Yeah.
But yes, but that's I like that they showed us that at the fucking very end. You couldn't have shown us that any sooner.
Well, they were wearing those flight suits. That was their like makeshift X-Men costumes. Yeah.
They all got a match. I really liked the Quicksilver scene. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be more of the same shit, and it kind of was, but they made it bigger.
Yeah.
They had more fun with it. It wasn't just contained to one room. I really love seeing the world through his eyes in the little time bubble. It's so much fun because he's like moving the dart around, like for no reason. He's giving a bullseye. He's got the dog with the pizza. He's like having fun while he's like the whole place is blowing up and he's just being silly. And I love the effects. That was like my favorite scene.
I like the 80s music. There was the Four Horsemen song.
Yes. Was that Metallica?
Metallica?
Yeah, it was Metallica.
Good call.
And then you had Eurythmics. Yeah. And there was a bunch of other ones that I don't remember. Those are the two that stand out the most to me. There was other ones, too, that I didn't that are there, but I don't remember them off the top of my head.
Sitting here seething, waiting to just talk.
Oh, my God. Okay. any other positives? Clearly, Anthony has no more good things. Look, I like that we got to see a Wolverine berserk out and kill a lot of people.
Yep.
I like that we kind of got a Cyclops origin. I don't think we've ever seen a Cyclops origin like that.
Nope, definitely not.
I'm really, like, picking, like, the good things are intertwined with bad things for me, so.
Even Storm's origin was decent.
Storm's origin was decent, and we got a Storm that has a fucking accent, finally.
Oh, yes. Cool, yeah.
Now, well, what the accent is debatable, and why she's in Egypt, is she South African, what's an Egyptian accent?
Didn't Halle Berry do it?
No, dude.
Like, X1 or something, she had a fame.
She tried to do it.
Yeah. She did it for one line in the very beginning, and then never again. She's like, fuck this, I ain't even trying. Like, she didn't even try,
you know,
dude.
Why she wasn't trying? Because the script wasn't given. Or anything anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah,
and she probably could have done a good one. She's not a bad actress, but nothing.
No, she's an Academy Award winning actress.
She could do a fucking
actually.
South African accent. So, and I love the Mohawk.
She's also a Razzie winning actress, which is kind of funny.
She got some Razzie to Academy. That's a good point. Maybe she can't do a fucking accent. Maybe that's why she didn't do it.
Well, no accent would have saved Catwoman. Just none.
No.
Yeah, no.
The accent's not helping. I like that we got to see a bunch of mutants. Like, really, that was a lot of fun. You see a little bit of Blob.
I did see Blob.
I like how Angel gets his metal wings. That was pretty sick.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's a pretty sick moment.
See, I think everyone trashed this movie as soon as it came out, so I went in with super low expectations.
Oh, okay.
And when
so
I saw
I,
everything
though.
I saw, I was like, all right, I can totally, I'm okay with this movie.
I went in with no expectations, and even then, I was like, wow, this is, the problem was by the last act, I was like, is this still going on? Is this over yet? And I tried to go in there with low expectations.
Are we still doing the positives?
Well, I think we're.
Does anyone else have anything?
I think we're near. We already talked about like they set. I like that they set up a nice young group of X-Men that you really want to know more about by the fucking very last 30 seconds. And maybe I wasn't. Maybe are you so excited about the post credit Essex Corps drop with Mr. Sinister?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was another thing. Like, a lot of people compare this to X-Men 3 because, like, there's a bunch of stuff just crammed in it. The storyline's all over the place. But I think the reason I like this exponentially more than I like that is, number one, it doesn't shit all over the source material the way X-Men 3 did. Because, I mean, that was just a – oh, my – it was a tire fire.
I mean, as much fun as you like seeing Vinnie Jones say, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! Like, he never has ever said that.
Well, it's not even that. He's not a mutant.
He's not a mutant. That's not what he would say. That's just wrong.
And the other thing is, this movie left me very excited for the future of the franchise, unlike X-Men The Last Stand, which is like, all right, so – again, you're going to make three movies where you could make 40. You know, you're going to combine it to three because we just love trilogies so much. And then you're going to give me a total just total letdown for the third one. And you know they're not doing anything after that. So it's like,
well, I'm glad you appreciate the setup for the – that positive is also one of the negatives of the movie is that the whole thing seemed to be, we just have to do this. Here's the franchise. Mm-hmm. Let's fucking start over now. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm so fucking angry.
Okay. I think we can move on to... Hold on. We need some kind of audio break.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Talking nerd! Okay, Anthony. Negative section engaged.
Yep.
You go first.
All right. So Days of Future Past was actually a pretty awesome film, in my opinion.
Yes.
I liked it a lot. Basically, the whole crew is back, and they add like new characters. So I don't know why, but it felt like... everybody that worked on this film half-assed it. I don't know why the script is so bare. I don't know why, like, all the characters except, like, Fassbender and McAvoy are pretty much sleepwalking through their role. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is given probably her shittiest performance ever.
She looked a little bored.
Every character, like, characters are, like, we saw Civil War. We saw an ensemble film where every character has their moment. And this film, I'm not sure... they just throw in characters with no regard for, like, their moment or, like, why they're even in the film. Like, Angel, why is Apocalypse recruit Angel? Other than it being a cool thing that it was from the comics, Angel has no character.
I don't think Psylocke says a word.
Jubilee, what the fuck is Jubilee even in this movie for? Like, are you serious? And then the biggest thing is this film, if you have this bare plot, you need to have a charismatic fucking villain that is, like, every time he's on screen, captures the audience. Oscar Isaac is a great, very good actor. They gave him nothing to do in this movie. He literally, the part where he puts his hand on the fucking TV and goes, learning, is the fucking, that's the part where I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck are we watching right now?
Here's the thing, though. Anybody else, it would have been even worse. Like, he barely pulled that off because of his delivery. Now, he's given a really stupid line. This is how he delivers it. Anybody, I'll agree, like, they made an amazing actress look borderline fucking ridiculous.
Well, he's an actor. Not an actress.
That's what I meant. Well, do you know for sure?
Have you seen the parts?
I don't know what bathroom he uses.
Yeah. That's true. He has his own. But they made a guy who's got amazing talent, like, look borderline ridiculous. And anyone else, that line would have been 1,000 times worse. But yeah, that's – I don't even know where to start. I just want to say that coming off Days of Future Past that had a crazy convoluted time-traveling storyline, that movie was edited so well. You never were lost, even though they're jumping back and forth.
They did a good job.
It was an amazing job to this, where it's like point A to point B.
Yeah, but nothing? They completely disregard that movie, too.
They do. Why was it Stryker Mystique at the end with Wolverine? How the fuck does he end up in the Web?
That's my big issue, too, is that, like Rugboy said, they've already fucked their continuity so much. But with Days of Future Past, it was like, all right, we know we fucked it up so much. This is it. We're new slate. Forget about all the prior films. It's starting now. We'll have real X-Men. Continuity is great.
Were you? What did you think that the status quo was at the end of that movie? Like, where do we leave off?
We're in your mind. We're in the 70s. Stryker is Mystique, and Mystique is like mutant and proud. So then we go to the 80s for no fucking reason, really. It's why is it in the 80s?
Yeah.
There's no the 80s, other than like a few songs, it services the plot in zero ways.
Yeah.
Zero ways. There's no Ronald Reagan commentary. There's nothing.
Yeah.
All right. And then you get to the 80s, and Mystique is hiding again. So you're back to like square one. Wolverine went to Stryker anyways. That didn't matter.
Yeah.
So Singer is ignoring his continuity that he established. So if he's ignoring the continuity, then why does anything fucking matter?
Yeah, he doesn't care. They don't care about the continuity anymore. He said things that, like, time is a river. He said, like, this doesn't necessarily end up where X-Men in 2000
can anyone
is,
answer
is
why
start.
It's in the 80s? Like, no, Havoc
cause
should
first
be 40.
Was in the 60s.
Yeah, I know.
They
Havoc
got
should
stuck
be like,
in this gimmick.
Havoc should look 45 years old.
Can we talk about that?
Hey,
more McTaggart has an age today, though.
Exactly.
She looks great. No, these fuckers should be way older.
They look
Havoc was 16 in First Class. He should be nearing 40. When his parents look like they're 40, like none of this, but they clearly just don't care.
They wanted it so that like Jean Grey, Cyclops are teenagers in the 80s, so that the 2000s films they would look the way they do in the 2000s films.
But then Singer has even said that that's not necessarily how it could be anything. He's like, time is a river. You throw a thing, it splashes, it goes around, it comes back together.
But why bother then?
Why?
But Singer's not coming back, is what I've heard.
Yeah,
that's
so,
great. I'm very happy. His run is done. It's done.
I mean, his fourth X-Men movie, and he had two really strong ones.
Yeah.
X-Men 2 and Days of Future Past. But, like, what Matthew Vaughn did with First Class was very refreshing. And they kind of, like, just destroyed all that with this movie.
See, I'm not a First Class lover.
I liked First Class.
Like,
I liked it. It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay, but like
I like Future Past better.
I hated Mystique as Xavier's stepsister or whatever.
That's always been really fucked up.
Like
that annoyed the shit out of me.
Yeah, like, oh, you can just live here because I'm 9 and I don't have fucking parents because reasons, you know. And it's just like it was. And there's that scene where they're like, let's pick code names. And like, I'll be this person, and you. And it's like the most painful thing I've ever had to sit through and watch. It's only like 2 minutes. It's like, and you'll be Magneto and you'll be Professor X, and then he's like, I'm disappointed. And it's like, we all are.
Oh my God.
To watch that on a movie. It just, I don't know, but I think a big problem with not only this but Days of Future Past as well is it's Singer, it's his two-part apology for the fans for leaving after X-Men 2, which is still the best, and letting the franchise go in the toilet. And there's so much more fan service in these movies, even Days of Future Past. Yeah. I mean, we got Iceman Ice Slide opening scene.
That's fucking great.
And it was great. Yeah. And there was a lot of great fan service stuff like that in this movie. But it can be hard because it's just like you feel it. Like he's just trying to apologize so hard. Well, like, I'm sorry.
My problem with the fan service stuff is it's cool if it's built up appropriately. That's why when you were talking about, oh, man, the Phoenix was awesome. Well, this Jean Grey, we don't know shit about this Jean Grey. So to already be hinting at the Phoenix, we don't even know this character. So why am I invested in someone turning into the Phoenix? It's just an image. I'm not really into Jean Grey yet. I don't even know if Jean Grey – and why does the Phoenix define her? She should be her own character.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that Phoenix thing, then it hits more powerfully.
Well, and
you're already waiting for the Phoenix. Like, it's the same argument when you throw in Emma Stone as Mary – what's her fucking name?
Gwen Stacy.
You're just waiting for her to die.
Yeah.
You're just waiting for Jean Grey to turn into the Phoenix at this point. You're not – there's no character there. You're literally like, all right, biding my time.
Yeah, they give it to you as soon as they introduce her. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. No, they wasted like this whole young new class of X-Men because the parts where they hung out – like, I really enjoyed those, and I wanted to see more. These people, they don't get a chance to, like, talk to each other or
interact. I'm still getting
interact.
No hint of Cyclops ever becoming a leader.
No.
Like, I'm still not getting that.
You know, James Marsden was a little, like, more, like, he was more cocky, preppy leader type.
They fucked him up from the beginning.
But I love this young cast. We just didn't get anything about them. They had nothing to do besides just stand there. Yes.
They cut a huge scene of them hanging out in the mall.
The Dazzler record album.
And, like,
this what was missing is that we didn't get to meet any of these people.
Well, that's what, like, Civil War and Avengers, there's scenes where they're sitting around a coffee table.
That's so important.
And just talking. Yeah. So then you learn about these characters, and it advances the plot. It's a lot of it's exposition, but a lot of it you learn about their character. And
but this movie was so boring that they didn't want – they started cutting stuff out, but they didn't know what to cut.
No, I feel like they had lots of really good ideas, so much potential. None of it made it into the fucking script.
It takes a while for the movie to get out of like first gear. Like
yes.
It's stuck in this gear, and there's no like huge action scene like in the beginning.
There's barely like a second act. That's kind of just like a two-act movie.
Yeah. Well, it's like it starts off in like this weird like early 2000s Egyptian like disaster film. Like, really bad graphics, in my opinion.
Some of the CGI, dude, the final battle scene where they were impaling the girders into It looked like TV level bad Into the Apocalypse. I was like, wow, did you just show me that? That was bad. I enjoyed the design of the Egyptian shit that kind of looks like circuit boards, mm-hmm. even though it's like thousands of years old. That was kind of cool. Let's talk about Apocalypse. Let's talk about his look.
All right. Like, first of all, whoever did the makeup for this is it. I don't know why they approved this. Nobody liked it. Nobody liked it at all. Like, as soon as you saw it.
Yeah.
And not only that, Apocalypse looked bad. Psylocke, you have Olivia Munn, and somehow you put on something that makes her not look hot. Like, for people in the photo, she looked hot, but it looks like it doesn't fit her crotch well.
Something did look off.
It squares off her hips in a weird way, and it makes her look like she's a flat ass. And, you know, I've seen pictures of her. Her ass is not flat, okay? She's got a great ass.
It seemed a little cosplay-y in that sense. Yeah,
no, I've seen better cosplay.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It looked like from the comic books, but something was off when she was just – first, she just stood around. But with Apocalypse, when his hood is on and when it's dark, it looks pretty menacing. But – in bright light, the fucking line on his face that's, like, clearly drawn from a makeup stick was so distracting. I was like, why is there just a crayon line on his face? It should be something.
What did you – I mean, you're the big X-Men fan.
I think Oscar Isaac was absolutely wasted as Apocalypse. Yay. No, that's number one. That's a role that's got Ron Perlman written all over it in big letters.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're going to – you know, this guy was in Inside Llewyn Davis, which was like one of the most amazing movies ever, and it was all just his performance. And to put him under 10,000 layers of latex is just so wasteful. And there was just some convention, like some monster convention or something, and the people who got outbid to do the Apocalypse were like, well, this is what we would have done, and it was like a million times
better. There's a better mock-up that someone did of him.
Of him.
And it looks great. It's not this.
Why do you think they made the decision to put those cables on his head?
Because he didn't have them on his arms? I don't know.
That was just a dumb – that made him look stupid already. Just that.
Yeah.
And then whoever designed the mouth on him, like he's supposed to have like these crazy blue lips and he doesn't.
Yeah. I mean there's a lot of shots too where like some of it's okay, but a lot of these shots they're like shooting underneath him. So he almost looked like he had like a double chin going on. And I don't know why, like, first, and like you said, they wasted Oscar Isaac, but I'm going to get into, like, his character, and they don't explain why he wants to destroy the world. There's, like, a couple allusions to false gods and, like, the world being, like, kind of fucked up and that needs to, like, go back, but, like, there's so much potential there with the survival of the fittest. Yep. And I was telling you off camera, or off, we're not on camera, off air,
yes.
on mic, there's potential there for, like, a guy that like plays upon like religion, mm-hmm. like is a godlike figure and plays mm-hmm. upon religion and like has these like extreme plays upon like hate.
Yes.
And has these followers that are like very vengeful, very hateful, and plays upon that so that like he's playing upon religion, but he's really just a fucking terrorist. You could have done some stuff where like like an allegory for terrorism or an allegory for like extreme Islam. You could have done some crazy
shit. They missed so many things.
And all the X-Men films, even though like I have my issues with them, they always kind of have social commentary and the comics are big on social commentary.
That's what
it's
all about.
And this had none of that.
Yeah, that's one of the most disappointing things. It's like this franchise started with bringing – first time you saw this team – it's social commentary. It's grounded in reality. You get it. And it started the X-Men movies, and it's ended up as like a fucking parody of itself now. I would have loved it. Because where is the terrorism relation? We have Trump supporters that also sound like what you just described. All that social commentary is completely missing. It's generic.
It was a poor – well, here's the thing. Like I said, it's all Brian Service. Brian Singer wanted to do the fan service.
Right.
And when people heard Apocalypse, like, oh, that's a great character.
Right.
But it's a terrible choice for a movie when you're trying to establish 10 new characters. And give backstory. Like, they should have done, like, the Friends of Humanity, which you probably remember from the cartoons. Like, the anti-mutant, like, clan people.
Yes.
So that would have been cool. And then you could have actually, like, you know, gone and sought out all these mutants that were whatever. And it was a bad choice of villain.
It was too big of a jump. And, you know, usually every movie is Xavier versus Magneto and their sides. And this was kind of – like they even messed with that a little bit. But I agree. Let's show – work that social commentary.
Well, that's why they wrote Apocalypse is because they got sick of doing Xavier versus Magneto, you know, for 20 years.
So but they're still doing the same – I mean, fucking Xavier's still like – You have good in you, Eric. How many fucking times are you going to tell it and then give him a pass after he fucks up and comes back and gets good again?
That's the problem with this universe is that, like, especially since he stretched it out to, like, now it's 80s.
Yeah.
Like, every time we see these X-Men, every time we've seen them, they're hated. Mutants are hiding. Yeah. It's the same shit, right? Eric and James McAvoy, Charles, he's always doing the, you know, you have good in you. He's trying to convince him to come over. And since it's the 80s and they're just hanging out in the mansion, so like for 20 years, there's like no adventures with the X-Men. Like they're like, they have an adventure in one decade, they rest. They have an adventure in another decade, they rest. They do it again, they rest. So it's like this universe isn't all that vibrant. They're not really going out and having these adventures. They're just sitting around in a mansion, hanging out, waiting because they're all hated, and then something happens, and then they rest. Like, there's not that much history in this universe that he's built.
It's shocking that it seems like he's run out of ideas when there's so much good shit to do.
The Mojoverse would have been a better choice.
Mojoverse would have been great.
I would like to see Genosha.
Yeah.
Why has it been 16 years of these movies, and yet there's only – we only know, like, Wolverine and Xavier and Magneto. There's huge – but we should have had, like, Scott and Jean Grey spinoff movies. We should have had Nightcrawler and somebody else. There's so much character to do, and I think part of the problem is they got to shove all the characters in each movie all the time.
Where the fuck is Rogue and Gambit?
Yeah, what about those movies there?
And Rogue has never gotten her due because she's an awesome character in X-Men, and she's always been a fucking piece of shit in all these movies.
I mean, 16 years, and now this movie – now you go, here's the X-Men. Here's your X-Men moving forward. Really?
Well, I think they're trying to bring it into that Marvel sphere.
It's like he's not even taking any lessons from what the MCU has done. Like, hasn't learned a fucking thing, and this movie just needed to come out.
He got the colorful costumes at the end.
That's
a memo from Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean, they Netflixed us in the X-Men costumes.
Well, the thing, too, like, and this has been a problem for a while with Fox Singer sort of running this whole thing, is they just don't like all the characters as much as, you know, as Wolverine or Magneto. They kind of got lucky in that they casted Jennifer Lawrence before she got popular.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, we got to beef up Mystique.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so many characters in this universe that they've already kind of taken and disregarded, like,
multiple times.
Emma Frost is like, Emma Frost twice they fucked her up. One time they gave her a shitty role, and then the other time they casted January Jones, who looked like she was half asleep playing the role.
I believe there's been three Jubilees, and each of them has uttered one line each.
I think
altogether.
I think Olivia Munn. Going back to Olivia Munn in the costume.
Yeah.
Can I just go back and say, so Apocalypse is designing these costumes for these characters.
This
like,
so great.
Makeover.
He's giving, like, Storm, like, she has her arms are bare, but he's giving her, like, pads and stuff. Like, Angel has, like, armor. Magneto's getting, like, his armor back. Then he's like to Psylocke, I'm going to put you in a one piece. Dude, like, what is he doing?
First of all, when he was making the costumes, I was like, he's fucking James Gunning this shit, like Project Runway X-Men style. And he's like, oh, I'll give you these pads over here. And then to Psylocke, he's like, nah, you're hot as you look. We're going to leave you just like that. And then most of the movie, she's standing around. They're in Auschwitz, and she's standing there in a bikini. It just seems so wrong.
He's drawing, like, tats on their faces with sand. It's like, what his power set? You said, like, he's acquired power from all the mutants he's jumped into, but
they,
like,
don't tell you.
But his power set's so lame. Like, he freezes the ground and you get stuck. Like, what is, like, I don't know what he could do.
I love that he decapitated people with sand from the building. Yeah. And if he can just dissolve everything, what the fuck are you waiting for? Just dissolve all the X-Men and get on with your goddamn plan. What's the problem? Why are you physically choking people out?
Well, I think that everything you guys said was right. I mean, you're just so on the nose. There's nothing I could disagree with. But I think this was Apocalypse Light.
Yeah.
And I was super pissed that he didn't get big outside of the astral plane.
Outside of the mindscape thing.
But I feel like because of the Easter egg after the credits, we know Sinister's coming, and Sinister's going to bring back Apocalypse, and I think it's going to be
the real Apocalypse,
not Apocalypse Bud Light version, you know, the watered down
Power Rangers version.
Yeah,
of Apocalypse.
Not the Ivanhoe's Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, what was that? I don't. That guy was not imposing. Like, he should be a lot bigger.
Yeah,
a lot taller. I mean, and he doesn't even look like Apocalypse.
But in defense of even Apocalypse in the comic books, there is kind of a thing where even his storylines in the comic books started to become the same shit over and over again every time. Uh-huh. Just as a quick history of Apocalypse, he first appeared X-Factor number 6, 1986, created by Louis Simonson and Jackson Guise artist, Louis Simonson being the wife of Walt Simonson, who drew him. So it was X Factor, but there, you know, after a while, there was a running joke where he'd be like, "Oh, it's like an apocalypse story. Like the same shit would happen over and over again." So, you know, to use him like this, it just seemed like a big, too big of a leap for this fucking thing. I would have loved to learn, hang out with more of the X-Men.
Yeah.
But it kind of felt like a long episode of a TV show, an X-Men TV show, which it should be. It should be an awesome X-Men.
Well, I think
TV
that's
show.
What he's going for. That's, you know, he's trying to bring in that nostalgia 90s market. And they're already like, well, the next one's going to be in the 90s. Good it's boy. Like, cool, I better have Jubilee this time. You better not cut all her.
I don't know if they should continue with this gimmick.
Does she even have they're any dialogue? Though.
She a little bit when they went to watch the movie and they hung out in the mall. Yeah. But then that lame fucking Return of the Jedi reference.
The third movie is always the worst. It's like, we're experiencing that.
Very on the nose that, there, yeah, Jean
that,
Grey.
That line was painful. Like, you can only say that line and include it in the movie if you have a fucking banger out of on your hands. And they do not.
Isn't it sad that Brett Ratner's movie had the only beast that I actually liked?
That was Kelsey Grammer Beast, right?
Yeah, looked like the fucking Beast.
He did look like the Beast.
Did they change him to Werewolf Boy? Like, why did they change him to Eddie Munster? Like, why does he look like that?
Why did they make him make a blackbird only to blow it up? I don't understand.
Dude,
why even mention that?
This is the part of the movie where I was like, okay, this is bullshit. Okay, the whole Quicksilver scene happens and the X mansion blows up. And then all of a sudden Stryker shows up with his fucking boys. Why doesn't Jean Grey just make him turn around and go back in the helicopter?
Why doesn't Quicksilver just do what the fuck he did again and get everyone out of there? He just saved everyone. He could do it in a blink of an eye. But everyone gets caught, of course.
That scene sucked, Dick. Because that scene, literally, it's just, like you said, fan service. It really doesn't forward the plot at all. And
that was just put in so they could get to Wolverine.
Yeah, so they could get to Wolverine. And it totally ignores the continuity that they established at the end of the prior film with Mystique impersonating Stryker.
Yeah, like, that didn't make any sense. Let's talk about the Wolverine cameo for a second. I appreciated the Weapon X thing. I appreciated they tried to make the silly helmet like Barry Windsor Smith drew in the comic books, but maybe it looked a little bit more silly on the screen. But it didn't add anything to his character, his storyline. Maybe the him and Jean Grey moment is like alluding to they have a relationship. But that was just like, what did she show him? I wish they could have added a little bit more into his thing.
Should have showed him her boobs.
She should have. That would have snapped him right the fuck out of it. So that's 83. What happens after he runs out into the cold? Is that – how does he end up joining the X-Men? How did he end up there? First of all, again.
Well, yeah. X-Men 1.
So it'll go back to the Rogue scene in the bar in X-Men 1, where she kind of...
I mean, you're not going to get those questions answered right now. What are you asking?
I'm just asking.
I also think it'd all be easily saved if, like, and of course, Disney would never do this because they're the devil. But, like, why not give me, like, a 3-issue miniseries that tells me, like, what Mystique and Wolverine did between Days of Future Past and this movie?
Yeah, that's
for
like
the hardcore fans.
That's like a hidden story. I kind of assume that, like...
They didn't do shit.
They didn't do shit.
Red arm. It's like the red arm all over again.
Well, clearly he got whatever they did didn't work because he just gets caught again. Maybe that could be a movie in itself. That's a little good spin-off movie in there.
It's the fucking fact that they made this in 1983 that just kills me. Like the 10-year gap. Again, there's no reason why this movie's in the 80s.
There
nothing.
Really isn't.
There's what message from the 80s? At least with the 70s, they were playing upon like the Nixon stuff.
Yeah,
right.
You had a lot of history in there.
In the 60s, the Kennedy thing, like that all made sense. The 80s, why the 80s?
Well,
why are we in the 80s?
They did the Cold War. All the missiles went in the air, but even that was really weak.
Yeah.
I mean, he sent the missiles to space.
Wasn't even that much of an important part of the story anyway.
You think that like that shot? What I saw in the trailer, all the missiles launch at once. I'm like, oh fuck, what's gonna happen here? Can we talk about how much fucking destruction these people caused? How is anybody going to trust any of these fuckers moving forward? Magneto destroyed, like, the Sydney Opera House. How many people died? Nobody seems
to give a
shit.
There's no regard for people, though. You don't see anybody dying at all.
And how
is
Magneto... How can Magneto walk around now? Everybody knows who he is. Mm-hmm. He killed all these people, and he's buddies with them at the fucking end.
He walks away like, whatever.
Whatever, I'll see you guys.
Who's responsible for the most deaths is Moria McTaggart. Because she's the one who lets Apocalypse out.
It is kind of her fault. Well, is it her fault?
Yeah, because she didn't.
The sunlight in there.
Oh, yeah. She opened the just because she left the thing open and the sun came in. But that's what I didn't understand. What were those guys thinking? Isn't that what they wanted, but they didn't know the sun had to hit it?
How are you going to know? But the
no one's done that before.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was very Indiana Jones. Come on, Indiana Jones.
Very convenient. I was going to say, to Rugboy's point, this is why like you see in like the good Marvel films, the Marvel Studios films, you'll see like people getting rescued and stuff because then it humanizes the destruction.
Yeah. Yep.
This you don't. Like, this is a world-ending scenario, and I don't give a fuck about this world whatsoever. I don't see anybody dying. I don't see anybody getting saved. I don't even, like, it's just buildings collapsing. There's
just
no
a lot of shit
of
flying around in the air for, like, half an hour in the third act.
The
like,
third act is in a bunch of CGI.
Xavier is lying on a rock for the last third of the movie. There's shit flying in the air for no reason. Magneto's just like, oh, I'm in this bubble. People are talking. Like, what the fuck is going on? Get to the point already.
You want to know what I think it is? Okay, it's so much. It's like when you get a tattoo. All right, you're sitting there in the chair, and then the needle hits you, and it hurts.
Yeah.
But then after like 20 minutes, you don't even feel it anymore.
Yeah, you're getting
and that's
numb
what
to
this
it.
Movie is. It desensitizes you. Like so much shit's going on all the time, yeah. And it's all like things flying up into the air and exploding that you're like it loses all meaning. You have to build to that. You have to make it count. You have to make it a moment where things happen. Like that moment where Magneto loses his wife and kid. You can attach onto that. You can grab onto that, and you feel his pain, and you feel that, oh, fuck, now he's got to kill people again.
But then we lose all of that immediately in the Auschwitz scene. Like, Magneto destroys Auschwitz. This is a very emotional moment. The fucking horsemen are just standing around in their bikini, and the steed means nothing to me now. And then you keep saying, like, the destruction means nothing.
The horseless horsemen, too.
Where are the fucking horse?
It's pretty funny. Weird that like you have this Auschwitz getting destroyed,
yeah.
And you have Psylocke in a bikini.
Yes,
standing.
Yes,
I like that Psylocke's in a bikini. All right, I just don't like the way it's designed. I want her to be even more naked. Okay, yes. But like you know, it's
I like it
was
too.
Very awkward.
I like her being in a bikini. I just the fact that they had to explain her bikini by being Apocalypse. Creating it out of sand doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I think that she should have kept that. She had like a long overcoat.
Yeah.
She kept that. And when she was about to get down and fight,
she could take it off
and let the boobs hang out and everything.
Her character, like, really has no reason to be even on the team.
No.
Like, she's just like, all right,
but Apocalypse in the comics used Psylocke a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm saying in this continuity of the film, at least, like, Storm was like, disenfranchised. She'd never seen another mutant before. Magneto was really angry.
We don't find anything about Psylocke or
something.
Angel.
Angel was something. I don't know why he joined either, but.
No. Psylocke brought her.
Oh, that's right. He brought him to her.
They went to Caliban or whatever.
Caliban was kind of cool, but it seemed like he was just picking, like, the first four mutants I see, you guys are on the team.
Yeah.
What the fuck? So Nightcrawler in the beginning. Nightcrawler, they get him in there. He's poofing around the cage. Why can't he just poof outside of the cage even though there's electricity?
There's electricity. Yeah, there's electric.
But he should be able to poof through the fucking fence, through the electrical field.
There's a dampening field.
They did
their homework.
They said the line. They had a line. I'm willing to forgive that if they explain it like that.
I feel bad for Olivia Munn because she passed on the girlfriend role in Deadpool. She's like, I don't want to be your girlfriend.
Oh,
I want to be a hero.
And she barely...
Devin Faraci had a quote about Olivia Munn in that film. Did you read that?
No.
He goes... He was like talking about all the actors and actresses, like they're half-assing it. Someone's blah blah blah. He goes, Olivia Munn. I'm not even sure if she was aware the camera was on.
Like, like she posted all these Instagram things of look, I'm training with a sword. She fucking barely does anything in the movie.
She has one
that
scene.
One slicey car scene that everyone's seen, it. And then
no, she fights a guy.
She fights Beast a little bit. They got the lasso,
but they don't really do any cool shit.
Here's my other problem with that. There's barely any actual fighting. In the movie.
No, there's not.
Nobody shot well. No, it's not shot well.
And you can totally tell that they're on harnesses.
You know what?
It's really bad.
They always have bad wire.
You know what it reminded me of,
Rugboy?
It reminded me of the 90s Godzilla films when it was just Light Wars. Remember those?
Yeah, the Heisei series?
What was that like?
It's just Godzilla and another kaiju shooting off atomic breaths at one another. And it's just like yellow versus blue light. This was just like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magneto shooting gray and then Cyclops shooting red. Like it was just Light Wars.
There was a lot of Light Wars. Yeah.
There's no actual choreography, choreography.
Quicksilver punched Apocalypse. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, that was a fun scene. Again, Quicksilver, like a highlight. Stand out for me. Quicksilver kind of steals every scene he's in. I kind of wish he told Magneto he was his kid.
Yeah, he pussied out.
He totally pussied out. I really want him to be like, because that would have stopped Magneto and made him invested. You know, but I guess they all got invested because Mystique
that
was
being choked
out. That
could have been the whole
out.
Crux of the story right there.
That would have been
that Gino finds out that he has a child.
Because
that,
he just – oh, my God. Yeah. Why would they blow this? Yeah. He just lost his wife and child. The instant humanity would have filled him again. I mean, it was great what he did eventually turn on Apocalypse, finally, and all of them had to attack. But I really wanted it to be because Quicksilver tells him, dude, I'm your kid. You're my dad.
It would have been an awesome moment for Magneto to be like, oh, I have another thing to live for.
Yes.
I have a son.
Yeah, like Professor X should have just like molded their minds together and they could see into each other's minds and it would have just clicked.
Jesus Christ. And we're all idiots. How do you fucking miss that?
Another 10-year gripe. So Quicksilver, 10 years later, is still living in his mom's basement.
That's great.
So this establishes that Quicksilver is just a complete fucking loser.
He's a
total loser.
And he looks exactly the same. Living in his mom's basement for the last...
And he is basically Quicksilver.
Well, to be fair, his hair is already gray.
Well, it's silver. Listen, the whole... Like, the Apocalypse being a villain forced everything to be contrived because... What are the odds that Quicksilver shows up on the same day that Apocalypse shows up to steal Xavier, that all this shit happens, and Apocalypse wakens now on the 10-year anniversary of the last thing? Really?
You know why? Because
really?
These Singer has this problem, or whoever wrote this film has this problem, where they don't write actual characters. They write characters to just serve the plot.
Yeah. And that's Simon Kinberg.
Can I have a rug down for a second?
Oh, yeah, here you go.
Here's the rug down.
Yeah, all right, I have
a manifesto, so strap yourselves in.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks.
Spoiler time.
Okay, this is the problem with Hollywood movies and script writing and all this stuff. You know, when you go and you learn to be a script writer, there's all of these things that they throw at you, all these conventions of how to write a story and all that stuff, and all the things that you need to do in the second act and the first act and all these resolutions and conflicts and all these things, okay? This is the problem. A long time ago, comics and movies were so far apart. They were completely separate universes, all right? Like in the 80s, like a guy that wrote comics would never be even allowed to even like sniff a screenwriter's balls.
Yep,
like that's how low a comic book writer was considered.
Yep.
So they didn't have to adhere. They never went to script writing classes. They were just guys. Can you write something? Can you write a sentence? Write a comic, all right? And they were unconventional in how they wrote their stories. They did things that – a Hollywood writer would never do because they've been educated to not do these things. So whenever you put a script writer that thinks about plot, servicing plot, blah, 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 this and that, a comic book writer is thinking about, okay, I need to make a great fight scene. I need to make a great this. I need to make a memorable like arc that's 5 or 6 issues long. You know, they think completely differently. And that's why the comics always – read better, they make more sense, and the continuity, you know, is kind of like untouchable by these Hollywood movies because they start slapping conventions that don't fit comic books, they don't fit the medium, and then you get what you get. You get like this stuff, like plot servicing bullshit, like things like one note characters that don't do anything. You know, this is because a comic book writer. Now, I think if you read comics now, they're more akin – that's another reason I hate comic books now is because now they're more like Hollywood screenwriters.
It's rubbing off bad the other way.
Yeah, it's now, especially that Disney owns Marvel, you're going to get even more bullshit. So get ready for it to suck really bad.
This thing is devoid of character moments, character arcs, character development, and that's what all this should always be about. Like to Rugboy's point, it's character. These are character-driven things.
And creativity.
Yes.
They didn't have a fucking bunch of shareholders sitting there in a room somewhere.
It's not made by committee.
Deciding what the movie should have.
Correct.
Well, it is about characters because even as thin as this plot is, if the characters were awesome, it would have been all right. Avengers, the plot is not all that elaborate.
Yeah.
It's just Loki wanting to take over the world. But we love all the characters, all that interaction. So fucking awesome. I was going to ask you, though. I mean, we've been bashing on this film. Is there anything that we've been wrong about or anything that you think that you disagree
with? Bring us back from the dark side,
anti-hero.
Bring us
back from the dark side. Yeah. I mean, the thing with me is I really like this movie because I'm an uber fan. I'm a diehard X-Men guy. At the same time, and I probably should have put this disclaimer in the beginning, I don't know how much I could recommend this movie to people who aren't fans.
But even as a fan, you're not disappointed in the least at the end of the day.
I wish that that Danger Room sequence would have gone like an extra 30 seconds. Because that's what I really would have wanted to see in Days of Future Past.
Show me them fighting
a
little bit in there.
The 70s X-Men fighting a big purple Sentinel and they all got costumes. Like, I really wanted that in Days of Future Past. I didn't get it. And, I mean, yeah, I was let down by stuff. But I think my expectations have been lowered with the X-Men franchise. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, they haven't done a great job at a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list, we don't even have time. There's not enough space on your hard drive for me to ramble off all the terrible shit they've done with these characters. And I get excited when I see stuff like the Phoenix, stuff like Mohawk Storm, stuff that other people are like, all right, well, yeah, that was a picture in a book, comic book in 1984. So that's
I'm like that also.
But isn't that disappointing, though, like, that you're okay with, like, when, especially when you see,
they've worn you down.
When you've seen, like, I don't know how you feel about Marvel Studios films.
They're great.
When you've seen, like, what they, you know, what can be accomplished when you pay respect to the books, but then you also have very good writers doing and very, very good characters. Like, there's a lot, I think the bar has been raised a lot in terms of superhero films.
Yeah.
So to be, and I'm not putting you down, but to be okay with, like, this, I know that this franchise hasn't been the greatest. And I know that they don't always hit the bar, so I'm going to be okay with just as long as they give me a couple cool moments, I'm good. Like, well, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more that they can do.
There is a lot more that they can do, but I don't know if they really can, because I feel like Marvel Studios and Disney, like, they know they're going to make 15 goddamn movies.
Yeah.
So they can really develop their characters, really do this. They can do a lot of things that you just can't do in this X-Men franchise. So I feel like Fox is like, all right, you want to make another X-Men movie? All right, well, here's your $200 million, and if that movie does good, we'll talk.
Yeah.
So it's not like they don't pace it out well. They don't, you know, they don't write these huge arcs that go through four or five movies. I mean, seeing Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America all on the big screen together for the first time was like the most boner moment
you
of
can't,
the century.
I mean, you can't. That moment is so special. It still has yet to be really tough.
But no, that's a good point.
But those characters were developed, and in X-Men, you get very little character development because
they're running
just
film
like,
to film. Yeah,
they're running film
instead of
to
a
film.
Big plan. And this, what you said,
they're not setting up. They literally, like he said,
they don't have a plan.
Yeah, every film has to make an X amount of dollars, pun intended, because if they don't, then they're like, well, we're not continuing with
this. And then this is why this movie felt like a perfunctory marketing campaign to explain the franchise now moving forward.
No.
Here's the commercial.
You're forgetting the one thing, the licensing, is that they have to make a movie every 7 or 8 years in order to keep the license. So they're just going to crank out whatever they want. Look at the Fantastic Four. They knew they had a piece of shit, and they still like, fuck it, let's do it. Because they got to make that movie.
It's surprising that this came out 2 years after Days of Future Past, which it seems very quick.
Well, I think even though you're right about the licensing, and trust me, we'll get an X-Men movie at least every 7 years until, you know, the sun burns out. I don't know. I think that at this point of the game, 16 years in, the full-on reboot is on the table.
Absolutely.
And they're like, if you make an X-Men movie that totally shits the bed and everyone hates it and it loses us money, we will tear this universe down and start anew with colorful costumes and do fully our version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for us.
They're just like, this movie had to be made. They're just dragging. They're behind. Now they've kind of cleaned the slate
again. I would be a big fan of the reboot. What's kind of, not strange, I don't know what the word is, but this franchise, it started at a time when superhero movies weren't a thing, that they weren't embracing the colorfulness. So you had the black leather, and then you joke about yellow spandex. So it's lived through like almost two eras, two or three eras of superhero film, where it was like you had to explain everything was dark. Then it lived through that. Then it went through like this weird fucking origin phase where everything was, you know, had to be explained. And now they're in like the colorful phase.
Yeah.
So it's had like two or three life cycles, but it wasn't planned to be this long. So it's a weird weird thing where I'd almost be like, all right, let's just start with this team that we saw at the end, and let's just start like a new like reboot. Like, forget about everything. And
listen,
that's
a perfect segue to go on to the next segment. I want to talk about what's next for this franchise. How can it be saved? What do you want to see? But I want to start with the post-credit scene, Kevin. Being our expert X-Men expert, I got to tell you the post-credit scene. I'm going to be completely honest. I'm a big X-Men fan. I'm a nerd, but I did not know the name Essex right away. Yeah. And the whole, for the movie to have this post-credit scene, and for me to be like, what the fuck was that? And just not even be the slightest bit interested was a little odd.
The post-credit scene was not done well.
So like, what's going on there?
So a guy walks in, grabs a vial of blood, puts it in a briefcase with other colored vials.
Whose blood is that?
Wolverine's.
Weapon X. He has Wolverine's and Weapon X DNA, and it says Essex Corporation.
So the cloning of Wolverine is what gives us the X-23, the Lady Wolverine.
Okay.
So that's cool. So that's definitely a part of it. The other part of it is with the Essex Corp is Mr. Sinister is Nathaniel Essex.
Right.
Nathaniel Essex is Mr. Sinister.
Now, what I think they're trying to do is they're going to try to set up this Essex Corp in the X-Men universe the way they've set up like Oscorp in the Spider-Man universe.
Oh, okay.
Geek Booner.
I could be okay with that.
So, yeah, and, you know, the other thing with Mr. Sinister is he's a big part of the Apocalypse. He's always, like, with Apocalypse.
They're buddies.
They're buddies. And he's obsessed with Jean Grey and Cyclops.
Okay.
So, you know, genetic experiments and kind of all kinds of crazy stuff. And I think – I don't know if there's going to bring Liv Schreiber back for
– Sabretooth.
Sabretooth back as Sabretooth. But I think that an awesome thing that they could do is you have to bring in Liv Schreiber as the – Sabretooth, we know from that train wreck of an Origins movie.
Yeah.
Where he's just human with the long nails.
That was the last time we saw him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes into Essex Corp and comes out the Sabretooth we knew from X-Men 1.
Oh.
Because, like, he wants to get better like Wolverine, so, like, they do experiments on him and stuff, and he comes out like the
so
huge
So he's more
long
like
hair.
The bigger feral.
What is Mr. Sinister's deal in the. Because I know, always remember him as the fucking pale-looking vampire dude with, like...
the glam.
Blue. Yeah. He super glam.
He's got,
yeah, super
he's got like, these black...
Evil Colossus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Evil Colossus. He's got, like, these black wings.
He's always
things.
Looked really fabulous.
Mark Silvestri designed him, I'm pretty sure, on that.
Because Apocalypse is, like, survival of the fittest. I know Magneto and Professor X. Like, what
he
is
was a Victorian-era geneticist, genetic scientist, and I want to say it was something where, like, Apocalypse gave him the power to live through... the ages.
Okay.
So, and there's different stories where, like, he's trying to, like, bring Apocalypse back and stuff. And that's what I was saying with Apocalypse Light. I think Sinister's going to bring back Apocalypse, and he's going to be the Apocalypse we know from the 90s cartoons and huge fist hammers and 40 feet tall and crazy stuff.
See, according to Marvel Wiki,
all right.
During the 19th century, Nathaniel Essex encountered Apocalypse, who used his technology to transform Essex into Sinister, the last word his dying wife ever spoke to him.
So he's just he likes to mess around with genetics, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, I think the Oscorp thing is like the best, easiest way to explain that to everyone. And I do kind of want to go on the record as saying this. Making an X-Men movie, I think, is an unenviable position to be in for anyone because you have a 40-year storyline that relies heavily on time travel, clones, people coming back from the dead. Like, there's no great way to make that.
Well, the comics are a mess. So
You're starting with a mess.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. You're starting with a mess. I mean – the only way to go about it is to start in the 70s and then end in the 90s because that's before it got out of control.
Yeah.
Which is why I thought Days of Future Past really handled that crazy storyline very well for a movie.
Other than giving Kitty Pryde powers she'd never had before.
Well, they flipped that thing, and didn't really explain it.
And making it the Wolverine show again.
But that was the beauty. That old team, new team, put everyone together, like Fast and Furious 7 or whatever.
But there really wasn't a 70s team.
No, that would have been the giant size X-Men was like late 70s.
74.
Yeah,
74,
that 75. That was the big team, was just the giant size X-Men.
It was
team.
Colossus, Wolverine.
Storm, Nightcrawler, Beast.
Sunfire.
Yeah, Sunfire was in there.
For two issues.
The Indian guy, Proudstar or whatever.
Thunderbird.
Apache.
Thunderbird, yeah.
There's one named Apache. I think
he was Apache.
We have here on this classic cover. I mean, if you know comics, you know this cover. It's the new X-Men busting through a page of the old X-Men. But you got, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, Cyclops, Wolverine, and Thunderbird, you said?
Yep,
Thunderbird's back there. Hmm.
And they killed him off relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. And then... Warpath, who was the Native American guy in Days of Future Past, is supposed to be his like brother or something. They're related because that's how comic books works.
Yeah,
of course.
Two characters of the same race that isn't white, they're related.
So how much of this do you think does this story continue in the next Wolverine movie? Because the next actual X-Men movie is this Wolverine number 3, and the budgets come out.
They're doing Old Man Logan, though, from what I've heard.
So this is going to be like alternate, like almost feel like alternate universe or way in the future.
Professor
X
is going to
be the Dark Knight of Wolverine.
Yeah, but they've already committed to doing the Reavers, which are villains connected with Sinister.
Okay.
Which I've kind of mentioned it. I hate the crossover stuff. The first big crossover ever in comic books history, to my knowledge, was the Mutant Massacre, and it was Sinister sending the Reavers into the sewers to wipe out the Morlocks. So I'm pretty sure that that's what's going to happen. Now, how they're going to square that with the current timeline, I have not an earthly clue.
And kind of adapt the Old Man Logan storyline, which had a lot of characters they can't even use.
And that's a terrible choice.
So the movie's got a $127 million budget, and Professor X, Patrick Stewart will be in it.
Did you like the Wolverine?
The Wolverine I did like.
That was a surprisingly good movie.
The third act went off the rails.
Well, it went superhero.
Yeah, because you don't need to make the Silver Samurai a fucking Pacific Rim robot.
Oh, yeah. He was giant. The never end these fucking things right. Yeah. So we'll have Wolverine 3 with the reverb. So then we're definitely going to – that Sinister storyline, if this alludes to Wolverine 3, that's kind of cool that they're actually kind of starting
to set things up. Hugh Jackman in this film. Right. So they're set photos of him wearing like grayish hair.
But, yeah. And this is where they're going to set up X-23, possibly maybe hand the torch over so she's the new Wolverine.
They should, but it's going to be in the future. So who's going to bring her? Like, how? I don't want her to be a dead end like Emma Frost, where they started her in the 60s, they underused her, and then she died, and that was all we heard. Like,
have a cameo in the 80s for no reason.
Right, that doesn't fit in. For like one scene because they want we got CGI budget left.
Yeah.
Let's make this chicken to diamonds. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but what do you do, Wolverine? You have to kill him.
I think they're going to kill him, but it's so far in the future that they can use Hugh Jackman again in these 90s stories.
At some point, you got to recast. Why? We've been playing him for like 17 years.
Yeah, and he can't.
Can you ever recast him?
That dude's
50
something?
If you're going to do a yellow spandex Wolverine movie, and you could do maybe he had a little brief time as a superhero type guy, that would be cool. And you could cast a new guy and do that because you've never. That way, there'd be two separate things. There's like costumed Wolverine with a little, like a Havoc Wolverine meltdown or something. You know, like do something like that. You know, do something that's completely. There's so many Wolverine standalone stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the mask is coming.
I'd rather see him in the brown poop costume. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
80s. No, I'm fucking around. I don't want to see
Super
him in the
80s.
Wait, and Havoc's dead now, too, isn't he?
Yep. Havoc's dead.
Angel's dead.
Angel's
smushed.
Maybe dead.
How's a guy who could fly die crashing in a fucking spacecraft?
Well, the plane crushed him.
Yeah, but he has wings. He just jumped out. What are you doing?
Well, if the doors are closed.
Yeah, I guess,
they cut that hole in the top.
He could have made I didn't
know. Psylocke lived, though.
Psylocke can show up somewhere.
Her scene where she lived, she just like stares into the camera and just skulks away. It's like,
so
what
bad.
Is this?
How is she even allowed to be in movies?
What is going
nice
on?
Nice growing you.
She literally like backs away in slow motion. See,
it's like a cartoon. It's so over the top.
Back.
Well,
she'll
we know X-Force is coming.
Well, that's the thing. We're going to have Deadpool 2. We're going to have Cable. We'll probably get some Domino. Then you can lead into X-Force, New Mutants. Well,
Psylocke and Angel.
You're
going to
get a Gambit film. Yeah. Brian Singer's been saying the next X-Men film. He's just been saying this. I don't know if they're going to do it. He's like, I want to take the X-Men to space.
he also said he wants to take a break from making X-Men films now, which is probably a good idea.
Someone else is going to grab the reins.
But that part of the franchise sounds exciting to me. It's a shame that this movie just had to be made. We had to get past it, and that's what it felt like. And now we're past it. Show me some fun R-rated movies. Show me some Deadpool mixing in with these other teams.
Once you get Cable and Deadpool in there, the whole timeline's out the window.
Because
now it's time travel.
Again. Yeah.
He can jump into the future and get Rogue and X-23.
You can always have Deadpool joke around the timeline's really fucked up.
Oh, and he will.
Well, and he's already referenced the different people in the timeline.
What's the roster on X-Force, by the way? Is it just Cable, Deadpool, and who else? Yep.
For
the movie, I'm not sure. And there's been four different incarnations of the X-Force. The first one was the Cable and Deadpool, and that was the height of the Liefeldening of all of the X storylines, where the guns were huge, the people were drawn without any conceived proportions.
Well, you had Shatterstar, you had Feral.
Yeah, and that's the era I'm not as familiar with, is that first...
And then Bishop.
Yeah, that spun out of New Mutants, I believe.
Well, that's also
and Domino.
Domino was she was a hero or a villain? She was a good person, right?
No, she was on X-Force.
She was on X-Force.
You mentioned New Mutants. I believe the name is Josh Boone.
Yeah, Josh Boone,
who might be taking over and doing a New Mutants storyline. Oh, I don't know anything about the New Mutants. There's already been
casting news and stuff.
What are the New Mutants?
The New Mutants is a team of like preteen mutants that. It was actually – there's a whole thing with Magneto goes on trial and this whole thing. But at the time, Magneto was running the Institute, and Xavier was off in space with his space girlfriend. And they got like these preteen superheroes, and it's very character-driven.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's all character-driven. Not a lot of fighting, as I recall. I've only gotten a few issues here and there.
No, it's more of like a – it was more of like an answer to Vertigo than anything else. It was Marvel's kind of like very non-comic booky mutant story that was very kind of social issues.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It was dark in a lot of ways.
So that seems like it's happening.
Chris Claremont, of course, writing, which is why it's awesome from the early 80s.
Yeah.
This is where you had your Sunspot, your Boom Boom, your Cannibal, Blink. Blink was in this.
Magic.
Cypher.
Magic.
Feral. Shatterstar, like we said, yeah.
So, I mean, granted, Wolf Singer's not doing this, but knowing how Fox, they'll probably throw all these characters in there, and like three of them will get any screen time.
Well, Boone released the roster, and it was pretty much the original roster.
Oh, that's
that was
right.
Cannonball, Sunfire, Mirage, Wolfsbane, and Cypher or Warlock. One of Cypher or Warlock, and supposedly Maisie Williams, who's another Game of Thrones alum, was already cast as Wolfsbane.
Well, and Professor X will be in this. Patrick Stewart, Professor X?
Which Professor X? I don't know. And I've heard rumors that Storm is going to take a lead role and be like a professor at the school during this era.
Huh. But the timeline's so fucked up. Is it happening in the 90s or is it happening like now?
It was mid-80s. The book was mid-80s.
Well, I'm saying, but like this film, do you know where they're
That I couldn't
this
tell you. Yeah. I mean, where they're going to put it is anybody's guess, but I think we're going to start seeing a lot of time travel stuff with Cable and Deadpool, and it's really going to like
it's
jumble.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's going to allow them to cherry pick even more than they already do. Like, oh, we want this character and this character and this character, and it doesn't matter what timeline they're in, we'll just grab them up and take them where they need to go.
Make them. That's awesome. Boone teased Magic, Wolfsbane, Mirage, Cannibal, Sunspot, and Warlock.
Well, okay. You're the X-Men guy. What are your thoughts on the Channing Tatum Gambit film that potentially will come out?
Is that ever going to get made?
Disaster.
It's been pushed back. I heard Doug Liman, who was going to direct it, has also left and come back or something.
The director's left like three times.
Yeah.
One time, Channing Tatum held out for more money.
Oh, come on, Tatum.
See, it's weird, though, because like Gambit is one of those characters that's better when he's peppered in. I don't think he's, you know.
I think Rugboy said something like that, too, in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common hell belief, but it's like a lot of these characters, some of the best ones, even like Deadpool, like the fact he pulled off his own movie is pretty spectacular.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the template you'd have to follow maybe for a Gambit movie.
But Gambit's not like that, right?
It would be like a heist movie probably with a girlfriend and almost be kind of like mutant James Bondy maybe.
But he needs to be introduced in another movie before just coming out with a goddamn – we've never seen Gambit, have we?
Yeah,
any
we
of
have.
These? We have?
X-Men Origins. He's in
there. Origins.
And I love that actor.
I forgot
Gambit,
there's a young Cyclops in there too, but like I just forget about it.
That Origins film should never be mentioned. That film fucked up a lot of characters.
Let's do this before I got a couple of iTunes reviews I want to share.
Yeah.
I want to know, where do we rank this movie, each of us, in the X-Men movies?
Wow. I didn't even think about this.
Here is the list of movies right here. Where does this movie land? There's nine.
Nine, okay.
Ooh, I would go top to bottom, probably X2, then Deadpool, then Days of Future Past. Then maybe the Wolverine's got to be in there, and then maybe X-Men Apocalypse. So it's probably like four or five. It's middle of the pack.
It's definitely middle of the pack for me. I'll have to agree. It's just above like X-Men Last Stand, and maybe above the Wolverine.
I'm gonna go seven. I think the only films that were worse than this were The Last Stand and Origins.
Funny, you know what? Last Stand made a lot of money, surprisingly. Like it made it's like one of the top movie moneymakers.
It was in the time when people weren't like they were just eating up superhero films and not with no regard for the plot might kind of suck.
Yeah. No,
that doesn't matter.
It just, it was the momentum.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, it was the momentum. It was like when he was at his highest as Wolverine.
Hugh Jackman, Halle Berry. Like,
yeah, you had all them. Ruggs, where does this movie stack up for you in all the X-Men movies?
I'm kind of like in the – I'm not in like Anthony's camp where it's all the way to dead last, but it's probably in the last four, definitely. It's like, you know, I guess in the middle where you guys are at.
It's really middle of the range for me because like – you know, X2 is way better, obviously. Days of Futures Past. The first X-Men, I think, is...
That one doesn't hold up as well if you watch that.
Really?
No.
But just for what it was and
Magneto's
at the time,
plot makes no fucking sense. But
Deadpool...
Historically, it means
yes.
A lot.
Yes.
That film means a lot historically.
It's like the first Avengers movie. Like, you didn't think you'd see a fucking X-Men movie.
Well, Christopher Nolan thanked Singer. He was like, thank you so much for making X-Men, because that's what laid the groundwork for me to do
absolutely.
Batman.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the first... There's Blade, but people didn't really associate Blade with superheroes.
Right. Blade was just like your vampire trilogy.
Batman... What happened was, Batman started off in a fantastic, like, not grounded in reality type of movie. It was like a fantasy. And then when Batman Forever came out, you knew that this was going in a bad direction. You know that that this guy had no idea how to handle this shit and was taking it back to like 1960s Batman bang pow, you know, ridiculousness.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Super camp. So we got to like make a statement and just say that all of us, we don't want that.
No.
We want it to be fun, but not that fun. All right? Like, because I hate when people say it's got to be more fun. It's got to be like, no, because Hollywood people don't know what that means.
No.
They're going to think they're going in the opposite direction, and then they're going to hire Joel Schumacher, and everybody's going to be wearing, like, nipple tassels.
And that's funny, but that's what happens. Like, 89 Batman, you're like, okay, finally we're getting something that's, like, he's taken seriously. It devolves into camp. Boom, you get X-Men 2000. It kind of starts it again. You're like, oh, they're taking this shit seriously again. And then this led to this, but that really hasn't – in the series, it may have devolved a little bit, but the ripple effect it's had with other movies, it's still kind of going. But I feel like these things are cyclical.
Cyclical.
And we're in that – we're kind of in that middle period again with its – where it's – is it too dark and gritty or is it too fun? What's the balance?
Right now? What's the era?
Yeah.
The era is –
what's the era right
fun.
Now?
Fun.
Like, it's fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like colorful character. That's why Batman v Superman got so much hate.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it being a shitty-ass film, but a lot of it was like, this film is so fucking dark. Why are we still in this era of dark? The dark era peaked with The Dark Knight. They started doing, like, Wolverine Origins came out. They tried to make that dark. It sucked.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of films were trying to be dark, but The Dark Knight was like, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns.
That was the height of the
dark. But then,
the
like, when Iron Man came out, then it was like, oh, we can do super fun movies. Like, colorful characters. We can, like, the line where he goes, throw some candy red on that. Like, it's just all color. Like, that's when it started. And now, so we're in this, like, colorful era. And then DC's trying to bring back the darkness. No one wants that shit.
But don't you think that it's going to devolve into that again?
Oh,
into that where it's going to go out of control?
It'll
and
go
it's
to camp.
It's going to slip. Well, so, and that's why, like, Fox is just weird where they are with this X-Men franchise. Because this movie is kind of fun. It's kind of dark. But how can they,
they have to
fit into this?
They have to be really careful with Deadpool because it can go to camp real quick.
Yeah, that's borderline.
I look at Gotham.
Yeah.
Because that's right on the edge.
Yeah.
That's where it's gone way the other way. And that's what could happen with with this franchise if they're not careful.
Well, I think they're coming around to actually enjoying making these movies, and I don't think they've quite figured out how to do it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw an online article about this Tom Rathburn, I think his name was, and it was Rathburn's Reign of Terror. So, like, if you've seen that leaked Comic-Con footage of Deadpool at the end when he's like, "Hi, Tom." Tom was the dude who, like, hated these – like, he couldn't wait to stop making X-Men movies. Just hated everything about it. He wouldn't greenlight the Deadpool movie. He just – he meddled and fucked with these movies so hard. It just – you know, as we know, it made them almost unwatchable with X-Men 3. And I think they're, like, coming around and they're trying to apologize for the terrible things they've done. They're also trying to adapt to the new colorful – superhero world.
I mean, but yet they you know, they're making Wolverine R-rated. So I think they got to learn from Deadpool. They got to look at what Marvel's doing and then carefully pivot this shit with what you have that works. Because now you got to fit in between the DCEU and between the MCU.
They're in a weird spot though, because they made Deadpool, which was R-rated, but then they also saw Civil War, which was super colorful. So they're like, where do we go?
Where do we fit in?
It was really colorful. I mean,
it was colorful.
But it was also R-rated.
Yeah. I'm worried about the corporatization of everything and like the fact that they need to sell toys and Disney wants to do this and do that. And I'm wondering when that's going to start leading and leading the direction of the movies. And then we're going to get – see, the thing is about movies, the great thing about Civil War is there's a visceral – and Deadpool, there's a visceralness to it. Like Deadpool shoots people. He punches people. He hits people with swords. There's tactile stuff going on, like almost like a kung fu movie. That like, kung fu genre has been around for like 30 years and it's still going strong because it's visceral. All right, and we just watched a movie where there was nothing visceral going on. No, it was all powers being thrown at each other, like Anthony said, like old Godzilla movies were just beams hitting each other. So they always have to kind of – if they're worried about we're going to make a movie just to sell a toy or we're going to get him to do this, that, and it's not about – look, we got to remember that people want to see heroes fighting bad guys. They want to see somebody punching somebody in the face. They want to see that kind of visceral action. You know, they have to remember that and not – kind of get distracted by all this other corporate shit that's going to come along the way.
Well, the X-Men can't make toys. There haven't been tie-in toys for an X-Men film since maybe X-Men 2.
And apparently that goes back to like the Perlmutter at Marvel feud there.
Yeah, I want to boost up anything like, that's outside of their realm.
They wouldn't even...
There aren't any toys to any of those movies, are there?
None. They wouldn't even license Jennifer Lawrence's likeness to Hot Toys to make a Mystique Hot Toys.
Wow!
For Days of Future Past, you got. Wolverine,
I could have sworn that there's a Wolverine toy, though.
There's a Wolverine Hot Toys. If you've got $400 to spend on one,
they're all $400.
But there's no. I mean, there's. You can get Chinese bootleg ones, which I've looked at, and they look decent for like maybe X3, Jean Grey, Magneto, and Professor X. But other than that, they have not released any toys.
Man,
and they refuse to.
It's such a shame because they're just the wasted potential that you're like, dude, there's so many great characters and great storylines.
Yeah.
And this politics of this business is kind of fucking and hurting and it's affecting the fans ultimately because you can't get what you want.
Yeah.
Did you, before we get into what you were going to get to, did you want to bring up the feminist thing that happened with...
You guys want to talk about that?
I kind of do.
All right.
I kind of do just because it's a bunch of men talking about feminist issues.
This is like, going like to be.
So here's more men talking about feminist issues.
How ironic, right?
So we men need to get
for the female listeners, we apologize in advance, but.
Well, I mean, it depends on our opinion. But I'll preface it with, or I'll show you.
Explain the story.
What it was. There's a billboard ad with Apocalypse, and we've all seen the film. He's choking Mystique, carrying her. And I think the line on there is like something about dominance or something. Imran, you'll bring it up. But basically, I didn't think anything of it at the time. But there's been a lot of uproar about male dominance over females and using that to promote a movie. What was the line?
Using casual violence against women to promote a film. Yeah.
Right. What was
Rose McGowan, right? Was the big cheerleader.
Fox has apologized.
I'll look it up.
Of course, they caved. You know, for the people, I don't know. Like, someone put it well, like, if you've been abused like that, it's definitely a trigger image. But it's personal how you handle these things. I will say, for example, the way I can relate to that is a good friend of mine in 2003 hung himself, like, out of nowhere. Like, I knew he was a little ADHD, but I had just seen him. He was going through some shit, and he fucking just hangs himself. We played music, we were in a band. And this is like a first, none of my friends had ever hung themselves, right? I was crazy because, like, suicide's a very selfish thing. It makes you angry. But I just remember for about a year, whenever I would watch, and it happened in The Simpsons, whenever I watched comedies, and they would make hanging jokes.
Yeah.
It was just part of the gag, you know? It made me feel weird for about a year. I was like, oh, man, it's very different when you've gone through that.
Yeah.
But now I don't really give a shit anymore. I'm over that. It was funny. What was line, Anthony?
The line makes it a little worse. So it's that image that Imran has pulled up of the lady or Mystique being choked out. But the line is only the strong will survive. So it's like
now I can understand from that point.
When it's pointed out to you, then you're like, oh, that might not be the greatest.
On the other hand, this is a picture.
But can't you make an argument for anything though?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Isn't it like how far do we have to go? Like it's really ridiculous. Like you could take anything and argue it to be bad. Anything. You could have the fact that he's not choking her and make an argument that that's...
Well, you
that,
can also that's, argue that's it wrong. Shows that women have equal play in these superhero movies, that she is a strong enough villain to put up to go toe-to-toe with Apocalypse.
Well, they could... They, I understand. I didn't notice it at all when I first saw the...
Of course, it's not going to bother us. We're men.
It didn't bother me.
We've not been choked out.
But, I mean... When it's pointed out in the image, I mean, they could have chosen an image where they're just facing off. They don't need to have her being choked on the billboard. I could see the other side. I see what they're.
I mean, out of the thousands of images they had to pick from for their marketing campaign,
like I don't think they thought about it, and it wasn't like.
On the other hand, these are two fictional characters that don't exist in this comic book movie.
Imran. It's advertising 101. You got to have something that elicits a reaction.
Yes. Yeah. So do you think this is – they did see this and it's intentional. Like they caved and apologized. But look at the attention. It's not good press, but any press is good press sometimes.
No, they're just looking through the images and go, that grabbed me.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And that if I was the designer, I'm like, this is a compelling image right here. It kind of spells out the whole plot of the story. It's a comic book cover. Right.
And I think Jennifer Lawrence is up there on the list of American sweethearts. It's like her, Taylor Swift, and Beyonce sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, is Jennifer Lawrence going to die in this movie? Like, right. Whatever. But I want to interject that I think this billboard, at least in my eyes, is low on the list of like feminist faux pas that the X-Men franchise has committed. Because... You have, and I talked about this earlier with like letting my niece and nephew watch the cartoons. It's supposed to be a really good mix of girls and boys. Have any of the X-Men movies passed the Bechdel test?
Oh, that's that test where how many lines a woman has that's not with men.
It's two characters. The two female characters is the first one.
Yeah.
The second one is they both have to have names that aren't like Johnny's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the third is that two women have to have a conversation on screen.
And you'll be surprised how very few movies pass this test.
Someone told me about it like three or four years ago.
Now
I was like, I'm sure that happens all the time. And I started looking at my DVDs like, nope.
You never see two women.
The fact that Mystique has been naked throughout every film has been...
It's true.
It's been...
It's just blue paint.
Like, is she she's not naked in the comics, right? She doesn't walk
around naked. No, she wears that white dress.
But the white dress, yeah. So the fact that
she has clothes. She has a costume.
The fact that they... And they initially cast Rebecca Romijn Stamos as...
Rebecca Romijn.
As, you know, she's a model. So they made her naked.
She looks good naked.
They objectified her from the fucking start.
Because she's not an actor, really. She looks good naked. That's what they
do. Let me ask you something. If you adhere to everybody's things, can you even watch that movie?
No.
Like, isn't it going to be the most boring, like lame ass movie? Because a movie is an escape.
Yeah,
you can't walk up and see a naked Mystique in your real life. You go to the movies to see shit you don't ever see. What's the point?
It's ridiculous. Well, and like in this specific image, the proportion is also off. Why is his arm so short? Like his arm should not be that short.
I think X-Men movies with more better female characters would not be unwatchable at all. Yeah. Like, passed the Bechdel test, to give the female characters some actual screen time and not just be the Wolverine show plus the Eric and Charles, like, bro love trilogy.
Well, they had that when they rebooted the all-new, all-different, there was, like, an all-girls X-Men team.
Yeah.
I read that for a while. It was really good.
I love female characters. I really do. They're my favorite. I love Buffy. I love Xena. Those are, like, those would pass that test with flying colors. All right? They don't really make that shit anymore because it's so corporate now, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And corporate is very male dominated and very, they're looking at weird shit.
They want to play it safe. You know, there haven't been huge blockbusters with female leads, like $200 million female-led movies.
That's what we need. Well. And in fact, I saw a report that Wonder Woman, it will be the first $100 million-plus movie directed by a woman.
Wow.
Which,
shit.
It's awesome, but you'd think that would have happened by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but yes and no, because I mean, think about the movies that are typically marketed towards women.
Yeah,
because they're not big explosion movies.
They're not big action pieces.
So, well, they don't watch action movies that much, as we do.
This will be interesting to see how many women come out to see Wonder Woman that usually wouldn't go to see a superhero movie.
I was going to say that I think I made this point earlier, but I'll just reiterate: they basically got lucky with Jennifer Lawrence.
Wasn't
that Mystique role? I don't think was going to be this beefed up until Jennifer Lawrence got. As big as she did. Yeah.
And I think that was part of the problem of the franchise moving forward. There was her contractual thing. She wasn't really – there was a lot of blue people in this movie. She wasn't really blue a lot in the movie. And you could tell she's just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm done.
I think she's done.
I would be surprised.
Yeah, it's fine, dude. She could move on. Just let's move on.
She's needless.
But they left. The thing is, they left her as the fucking leading the team of X-Men.
Yeah, that was why.
Why are you doing
why didn't
that?
She leave with Eric?
Yes, they should have both just. She's
like,
but
she could just be replaced by another actor. She could make herself look like whatever she wants.
Yeah.
What if she decides to be black? You know, that'd be cool.
So, yeah, I mean, that was an interesting controversy. But
I just felt like we had to bring it up just because it got so big, and I didn't know about it until I read.
I don't think Rose is going to be working another movie with them after what she said, like, publicly.
Rose McGowan?
Yes. She goes, there's no context in the ad, just a woman getting strangled.
She's Moira, right?
Moira McTaggart. Well,
Rose Byrne.
That's Rose Byrne. Rose McGowan is Adam's family.
That's her. Oh, yeah. She's not getting a job with them.
Yeah, she hasn't.
No, Rose McGowan is neither of those.
Yeah. Rose Byrne.
Oh, no, that's.
Rose McGowan is the girl from, like, from Scream.
Yes.
Yeah. Rose
McGowan's there, like the gothic looking chick from Scream.
But she played one of the kids in the Addams Family.
That's Christina Ricci.
Oh, never mind. I'm wrong.
We're all confused.
There goes my feminist credibility.
That was like a sketch from like Electric Company. You mean this word.
Was she Casper the Friendly Ghost or was that Christina Ricci too?
I think that was Ricci. Also Christina. That was Ricci. I love Christina Ricci.
Rose
McGowan, first movie that anybody knew who she was in Scream.
Yeah, and wasn't she Marilyn Manson's wife briefly?
Yeah, and then she was also in Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah, Grindhouse movie.
Rose McGowan went to like the MTV Movie Awards wearing basically nothing like lace. Yeah.
Rose Byrne, on the other hand, I got to tell you, she like as they so underutilized her. She's in Neighbors. She's great in Neighbors.
Dude, speaking of feminine, her character gets fucked in this movie. She gets mind wiped, and then they're like at the end.
Then he gives her the memories back.
He gives her the memories back, and he's like, I mind wiped you, whatever.
That's the thing. I wanted her to be so pissed. Like, as it came back, she should have been, you fucking asshole. Should have been the first words out of her mouth.
She's not mad about that.
Instead, nothing. But
they already used their fuck, though. You only get one fuck. Yeah,
I like that it wasn't Wolverine. I liked that Fassbender had the line, or he's like, the fuck is you guys? Who the fuck are you guys? But Rose Byrne, also, I just watched Spy, Melissa McCarthy, Jason Statham.
Okay.
It's not a bad movie. It's really good. It's really funny. She's in that. She's really good in that. It's an R-rated comedy.
I just looked up Christine Ricci and Rose McGowan. I would have got them.
No, I love Christina Ricci. They're both a dark, goth kind of
look.
Yeah. We're idiots, people. Look it up.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's get to – look, we're going to wrap this shit up. We got a couple of iTunes reviews. Some kind of weird random ones. One from Daniken, 5 stars. It says – just says comics. Let's make Captain America great again. That's the whole review. Next one from Lukey Sounds. Can't beat it. Really. 5 stars. This is a podcast I have to tune into every episode. Always keeps my attention for long commutes. That's awesome. We are good at long commutes if you're working all day. And finally, we got one from Chicago GMR. The rowdiest comic book podcast in the galaxy. 5 stars. This podcast is a blast. These guys are not only good at what they do, they're excited about what they do, and it's contagious. Anthony and Imran have interesting and hysterical insights. Rugboy is the foul-mouthed Muppet from hell. He's not a Muppet, he's a puppet. Add those together, and you have comedy gold aimed straight at your love for pop culture. Give it a listen, you won't be disappointed.
Talking nerd!
Thank you guys so much for those awesome reviews. Listener, if you want to be nice and we made you laugh, let me ask you this. So how about you go over to jockandnerd.com/review and leave us a little iTunes review. It helps the show out. It helps people find it. They read the reviews. They get excited. They want to listen.
If you don't want to leave a review, well, you should. But if you don't, you can contact us as well at jockandnerd.com/contact. And there's like 4 or 5 ways you can get in touch with us. So
interact with the show. Yeah, we want to hear from you and or read from you. Kevin, dude. Thank you so much for hanging out and giving us your X insight. Where can the listener find you online if they want to say hi?
I am Facebook and Instagram at Mr. Antihero. Just no punctuation, nothing. And I also have a Facebook.
Mr. MR.
MR, yeah. Antihero. Thank you.
Yep.
There you go. All these notes will be in the show notes. The links will be in the show notes for this episode. So.
And I am still currently working on my documentary, God Save the X-Men, which is about the movie rights and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And there is a Facebook page up for that as well.
This is going to be an interesting chapter in the movie, this fucking movie.
Yes. And it'll be interesting to see how the TV shows play out because, you know, those are coming down the
pipe. Well, yeah. Right. So they just picked up, Legion got like a full, was it Legion or the other one? Hellfire. One of them is like moving forward with the pilot and stuff, and that's exciting. So
yeah, I think they cast Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec.
Yes, so Aubrey Plaza is in it.
Love her.
Listen, man, let's hope that we can continue to enjoy more cool X-Men stuff, even though this movie got kind of stale on us, but now it's done. Clean slate. You know, look at your Deadpools. Look at what, you know, Wolverine is going to be R-rated, the new one. Make something. Let's see if they can save this, right, guys?
Yeah. Where can
absolutely.
Where can they find the Rugs?
Rugs, where can they follow you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at ReallyRugBoy, and you can get into some nice exchanges. I always answer back if I see your tweets. I really try to get back to everyone.
Mostly it's David Mobley that you have to respond
to. Yeah, one guy.
Fucking over and over again. The guy just, he tweets everybody. God bless him, though. At least he's engaging. Get on that listener. The last thing we got to tell you, call to action. If you like the show, tell a friend. That's all. Go spread the word. Post this on your Twitter. Post this on your Facebook. Tell a person in person. Give him one of these.
Jock and nerd.
And they'll think you're either having a stroke or that you're trying to convey a message.
Yeah. Cock and turd.
Cock and turd. But you guys have been telling people. We've seen it. That's awesome. Keep up the good work. Thanks for listening. This is the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's the nerd.
We'll hear you next time.
Wowie zowie! Really, go play with some basketballs.
Bro, do you even podcast?